It's time for the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. Stay tuned as we discuss local and national sports from Southeast Missouri and beyond. The Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle is brought to you by Royal Retros. If you like cool throwback jerseys of defunct sports teams, Royal Retros is the place to buy. If you go to royalretros.com and you order with the code SPORTSDESK, all one word, you can get a little bit off your order. So check out Royal Retros. And now on with the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
And welcome to another exciting edition of the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. I'm Mike Bueller. Kyle Roberts and Mark Sanders are going to be joining us in a little bit to talk a lot of high school football. But before we dive into high school football, this is our Raiders and Lady Raiders Super Show. TRC basketball season starts Friday for the men and Saturday for the women. Got some great matchups coming up this weekend. The men are going to open the season Friday night with Gulf Coast State College. Not only are the Commodores nationally ranked, they are coached by former Raider basketball player Lane Ballew. Then on Saturday, the Lady Raiders are going to open their season against Aulnay Central. And then after that, they will play three straight nationally ranked opponents. They will host Wabash Valley on Sunday. And then next weekend, they will host Itawamba and Trinity Valley in another matching of nationally ranked teams. But right now, we are going to dive into our Lady Raiders basketball preview. We are joined in studio by TRC women's basketball coach Alex Wiggs and by TRC sophomores Caitlin Lord and Kiara Neal. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Go ahead.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Coach, you know, like I said in the story that is in today's Daily American Republic, some teams rebuild, some teams reload. Your team is definitely one of those reloading teams. I will let you go from there.
Yeah, you know, we graduated 12 last year. And so, big task filling those shoes. But I think you hit the nail on the head, Mike, that we reloaded with starting of these two next to me, sophomore Caitlin Lord, or redshirt sophomore Caitlin Lord, and redshirt sophomore Kiara Neal. You know, we have a lot of experience. Several of our sophomores are actually redshirt sophomores. So we have a lot of kids that are older, but not a lot of college experience from last season. Love this group. They've been working hard and a really talented group.
Indeed. One thing I've noticed, like I said, y'all are starting out with tough teams right out of the gate. After playing Aulnay Central, you've got three straight ranked opponents. I'll let you go from there.
Yeah, we want to be tested. You know, we want to play the teams that hopefully we'll see at the end of the year. You know, this year in Lake Charles, Louisiana. But we've got to get tested early on and show these girls, you know, the teams that we'll see and what it takes to play at that national level. And like you said, we open up with three national ranked teams. I believe we'll have 4 to 5 national ranked teams in the month of November.
Wow.
And then in the first semester, we'll have 6 to 7 national ranked teams, with I believe 5 of them being national tournament teams from this past season.
I know. In fact, you close out the first semester with two national tournament teams from last year. When you go down to Tuscaloosa, even though you're not playing host to Shelton State, you will be taking on Kilgore, Texas, and South Georgia Tech. Both of them made it to the big dance last season in Casper. I'll let you go from there.
Yeah, both of them, like you said, they were at the national tournament last year. Both, I believe, are preseason. I know Kilgore is top 10.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure where South Georgia is. I know they're top 25. But both teams are really talented, really well coached. And again, kind of in the semester the way we started, you know, tested. And I think that time of year especially makes our team mature a little bit, because Christmas break's only 2 days away. They get 12 days off. And not only that, but we're on the road, not a lot of fans. And so, in my opinion, I love that. Love that schedule. I love going down there because it makes them lock in and builds that toughness that you need to be successful.
You've got two of your really cool home-and-home series this year. You play Wabash Valley up down here, and then up there you play them the first weekend here, and then you go up there the first weekend of the new year. You also have a home-and-home series this year with Trinity Valley. You know, those both are like some marquee games. I'll let you go from there.
Yeah, I mean, they're two of the top teams in the country, year in, year out. They have won the region several years in a row. You know, right now with Trinity and Kilgore kind of battling out last year. And I told the girls the other day, you know, if we take care of business in the region championship game last year, Trinity probably gets that at-large bid. But Trinity got upset. We got upset. We got the at-large bid at the national tournament. Trinity didn't end up going to the national tournament. But it's two programs that kind of dominated the state of Illinois and dominated the state of Texas over the last few years. And again, if you want to be considered one of the best, I think you have to get out there and you got to play the best and see where you stand. And again, get these kids ready to go for those big games.
One of the really cool things about this team is even though you only have three players returning from last year with Caitlin, Kira, and Courtney, you do have six sophomores because you've had three pretty solid sophomore transfer. And tell me about them.
Yeah, we have Tristan Spearman, transfer from SEMO. She's a 5'4 guard. Then we have Denaya Ross, who actually is a transfer from Trinity Valley.
Yep.
And then we have Lynn Reith from Florida. She Eastern Florida State. She actually played with Caitlin.
Yep.
They're both their freshman years at Eastern Florida State. And that's a 5'8 guard. Ross is a 5'9. Ross can play. She can play the three. She can play the four. But just three kids that have played at those levels that kind of understand what it takes. They have an idea of that. Now the problem is you know, Tristan didn't play a lot at SEMO this past season. Lynn was hurt this past season at Eastern Florida State. And then Ross battled some injuries down there at Trinity. So, yes, bringing in some kids that have some experience. But overall, like I said, very talented sophomore group, but just not a lot of experience this past season. So right now during preseason, I think that they would agree that they were knocking some rust off. And then Kiara just got released on, I believe, last Monday. And Kiara is knocking some rust off as well because, you know, I mean, it's a high level that of our expectations. And so whenever they jump out there, whenever they start playing again, that they've got to get back in the swing of things.
Indeed. And Kiara, you know, you got the good news that you have been released. How does it feel to be back? Yep.
It feels great to be back. I'm excited to be back. Oh, can y'all hear me?
You're good.
Okay. I'm excited to be back. I've been waiting for this moment for a very long time. It was very unfortunate for me to get hurt last year because, obviously, like, those are my first-year teammates. So it was a very rough battle, but I got through it. And then I'm happy to be back and play with my new team.
Indeed. And, Caitlin, you know, you're back from an injury last year, too. How does it feel to be back in the swing of things?
It feels great. It's just good to be playing again. I've watched all last year with Kiara, so it's just great to be able to be a part of it again and be a part of the team.
Fully. Yeah, and another one of the cool things with you is, like I said, you know, you've played with one of the transfers. You and Lynn were teammates down at Eastern Florida State a couple years back. You know, tell me about that.
It was great. We both kind of had a rough time over at Eastern, so it was really good to come back together and be able to, like, bond over that and just be able to be in a good place together and have a great coach over here to be able to,
yeah. Cool deal. Coach, you got some pretty talented freshmen coming in too. Tell me about them.
Yeah, you know, to go along with them, with the sophomore group, we brought in 9 freshmen.
Wow.
So we have let's see, there's 9 of them, so I hope I don't forget anybody. I think I've got everybody's names memorized and numbers memorized and all that. But, you know, our 9 freshmen, we have Layla Coleman, London Harper, and Italy Lewis, all from the Dallas area. London and Layla played at Duncanville High School.
That's right.
And then Italy comes from Braswell, which are two of the top teams in Texas. Then you move on to Arkansas, a little bit closer. We have Kai Wilson and Amiria Gaston. They are both from Little Rock Central.
That's right.
Let's see. I guess Layla, London, and then those two from Little Rock Central have won state championships.
Impressive.
Then you have Samaya Jordan. She is from Conway High School, another state champion point guard. Then you have Jordan Blake, 5'10", 5'11", guard from England, Arkansas, which is a small school outside of Little Rock.
Yep.
Then you have Kimora Wooden. She is from Memphis. She had another successful high school season, high school career. I'm trying to count how many that is.
That's eight.
That's eight. All right. Then my last one is actually another one of Caitlin's teammates, a girl that she played with from Australia, Amelia Carsonetti. She comes to us from she's from Narrogin, Australia, which is right outside of Perth.
Yep.
And so, again, all those girls, what I like about all the kids that we brought in, you know, even the sophomores, is that they're winners. I mean, Caitlin and Lynn played at the national tournament their freshman year. Like I mentioned, several state champions, kids that have been successful, and they know what it takes to be successful. You know, you can't teach winning as far as at this level. Like, because we have them for 2 years. You know, I think that during my 15 years of doing this, one of the best attributes a kid can have is that they're a winner and they know how to win. Because with winning comes hard work, with winning comes discipline and all those small things that in a 2 year span, you know, it's now the 4 year level's kind of going that way, but it is kind of, you know, fast pace on steroids, as I like to say. You've got to get these kids ready to go in 2.5 months and ready to perform at a high level.
Indeed. And, you know, one of the things that stands out is just how much y'all have been winners, especially these last few years. I think I wrote in my story this in today's Daily American Republic that with the Lady Raiders, it's national tournament or bust. And I'll let you go from there on that.
Yeah, that's our goal every year. You know, and the hardest thing to teach, you know, a bunch of 18 to 21-year-olds is that it's a process. You know, it's a process. It's every day. Because those are our goals, those are our expectations now. You know, I am not comparing myself to Gene Bess and the Raiders in any sense of the fashion, because Coach Bess is the greatest. But I think you look back during his 50 years here, and those were the same expectations.
That's right.
And so whenever took over the program, it was like, this is what we're going to do as well. And so these girls have really bought in to that. They know that it's not easy. You can ask them how practice is going some days and all that stuff. But they know that the sacrifices, everything that's happening right now is for, you know, the end of the year, so to speak. And just that stay the process, go about it one day at a time. You know, that's what Lady Raider basketball and the expectations are.
Indeed. Caitlin, what has stood out to you the most about this season, you know, as far as getting ready to get started?
What stood out to me the most is just the way that the freshman has, like, come in and just, like, absorbed all the information as much as they can. Like, it was so hard being a freshman and having to do all of that. And I think they've done it really well this year. And, like, they've had to come in and start and lift up some of the sophomores as well. I think it's, like, they're really great.
Kiera, you've been part of two national tournament teams here. What do you all need to do to make it back again?
What we all need to do to make it back to the national tournament, we have to lock in. Like, take what our coach is telling us and make sure that we're going out there and doing it the right way, executing, and then also uplifting our teammates, because a lot of the time it gets rough. Like, we're all learning new stuff. A lot of people are just not coming back to practice. So, of course, it's not going to just be bubblegum and rainbows all the time. Like, it has to, it's a process, like he said. So as teammates, we just need to make sure we lift each other up and, like, let each other know we got their back.
And there you go. And that is Alex Wiggs, Caitlin Lord, and Kiera Neal here on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
This is Three Rivers College women's basketball coach Alex Wiggs, and you are listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
And welcome back to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. I am now joined in studio by Three Rivers College men's basketball coach Robert Kirby and TRC sophomores Matt Hampton, Bryce Wallace, and Davin Francis. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike, for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Coach, I'm going to lead off with you. The season starts Friday, and we are jumping right in to the midst of the fire. We are opening the season with two nationally ranked teams. We are opening with Gulf Coast State College on Friday night, and then we have John A. Logan, who's only a couple of years removed from the national title, playing us on Saturday. And, you know, that's the first of four ranked opponents in our first six games. So we're jumping right in. Coach, I'll let you go from there.
Yes, we are. I don't know why Matt Hampton scheduled those games. Man, we shouldn't have scheduled those two games that early. I mean, I don't know what he was thinking about. But it's two good, very good teams. And we planned on playing very good opponents all summer. Not summer, but in the fall league. Towards the Jamborees, and they feel like this team is tough enough to take some lumps and still grow as we went throughout the year. So that's why we jumped in head first with a very tough schedule.
One thing I like about this team, we've got a nice blend of experience, newcomers and returnees. You know, first of all, we've got, you know, Matt's back, Bryce is back. You know, Bryce didn't play last year, but he played for us 2 years ago. We also have Johan Pouch and Seku Diagaraja back. And also back for us are Alan Stoddard and Antonio Williams. That right there gives us a good quarter build around. Let's talk about those guys leading off.
It does give us some more mature guys from the standpoint of playing experience and having a chance to be a little older from high school. But you still have to get them to jail, and that's what we're working on every day, trying to get them to understand how important it is to have each other's back in every possession, every class, every practice, all day long. And we're working on it every day. But I feel like each one of those guys have improved with their games and the knowledge of how to play. We're getting Bryce back. Hopefully we get him back by right close to Christmas time. Hopefully before that, he should be 100%. And got another kid that's coming in, Steven. He's down with an injury right now as well, but we feel good about those guys. Davin has been working extremely hard every day in practice, trying to get better as he goes and just on the little things about the game. Matthew's been very consistent with what he does on the floor every day, and his leadership role, he's taking on another role because Michi did a lot of the leadership talking last year. Matt was he'd pick his moments, and now he's having to do it on a much higher plane, and he's stepping up every day and doing a great job with it.
Good deal, Davin. You're one of the new guys coming in. You're a sophomore transfer from Fairleigh Dickinson University, I believe, in New Jersey. What's it like being on board the Raiders ship so far?
It definitely gives me a idea where we stand. You know what I mean? Coach Kirby just preaches toughness every day and just working hard and being consistent. So that's what I try to do and try to tell the guys, it's, you know what I mean, be very consistent, as much as consistent as we can be, and just work hard, you know what I mean, and everything just going to fall in line from there.
Bryce, this is your third year back here at Three Rivers. You're kind of the veteran on this ship. What's it been like so far?
It's cool. Like, I've been out with an injury, but, like, just watching everybody practice every day is, like, I really like our team. Like, I feel like our team is really skilled. Everybody enjoys each other's presence, and it's just, like, with the games coming up, like, we can only get better. We're playing really good teams at the start that can only prepare us for the future and eventually making it to Hutch.
Matt, you know, you're back from last year. You know, you were one of the big parts of the team that made it to Hutch for the first time in over a decade. What are your feelings this year so far?
I feel like we're going to do really good. You know, coming up from the Jamborees, you know, we played some tough opponents. So I feel like those helped us, you know, get prepared for these moments.
Good deal. Coach, you know, we got several newcomers coming in. The first ones, you know, I'm going to, you know, you talked a little bit about Davin earlier. We've also got Tristan Fleming coming on board. He was at Model State last year, averaged over 20 points a game. That's going to help us some in the backcourt. I'll let you talk about him and some of our other new guys.
Yeah, Tristan is a very accomplished scorer. He averaged 20-plus points a game last year in junior college, and that's tough to do no matter who you're playing. Now he's having to consider and work extremely hard on the other parts of the game, and that's a big, large reason why he transferred. He wanted to come here and have a chance to grow a little bit more with the team that had some other good players around him. And now he's learning how to play with other good players around him and be successful in that regard. But he can score the ball, and the other things he's got to work on, he's working extremely hard trying to get better at it. Other guys that be coming in this year, but Manny, Manny's a very big athletic forward that very skilled, very poised when he catches the ball. It's hard to speed him up offensively. He does a really good job of just taking his time and reading what the defense gives him. He's got to continue to grow as a player with other things on the floor. This his rebounding, being consistent with that and working hard. He's a freshman. You know, most freshmen, we try to get them to grow up and be sophomores during their freshman year. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. No, but we're going to work extremely hard at trying to get that done with him, as well as Steven. Steven is another big, 7'1" freshman that's coming in, and he's injured at the moment, and I mentioned him earlier. He's got to get back 100% healthy. He has a stress fracture in his foot, and he's working on recovering right now. He hadn't started practicing yet. A lot like Bryce, they both are doing a great job of keeping stats for us and running the clock right now. But they'll continue to get back on the floor, and they'll be excited to get on the floor when they do. The other guys, a couple of freshmen that we have coming in, Josiah Cotto, very good point guard, just really learning how to make the adjustment on the high school, from high school to college. Got good speed, good strong body. All the guys that we brought in can really shoot it. They're very good shooters, but understanding how to play within confines of a team and take good shots. Because they've been the best player on their team, so now they're learning how to play with other people that can play as well. So you don't have to force opportunities to, offensively, but he can really shoot the ball and puts it on the floor well. The other guys, Kylan Jones, very good shooter, plays the points back up at the point, got good speed, and athleticism. Drew Ward, another accomplished scorer that can put the ball on the deck, and he passes the ball extremely well. Got really good court vision, shoots it really well. Just them making the adjustment from high school to college. Who's the other?
Miles Jones is another one.
Miles Jones, very, very athletic, long forward that has very good ball skills. He doesn't always show them all the time. He's still making the adjustment. Of being able to get into gaps and find people as well as shoot it. Those things that they're learning, they're freshmen, and they've got to keep, we got to keep getting those sophomores that we have to pound on them every day to make them grow up a little faster than they want to.
We also have a couple more freshmen, Caleb Williams, who played in the Pop Roll of Showdown last year, and also Easton Evans from Greenville. Any thoughts on them?
Yeah, Caleb came in and started off really well the first couple of days of practice, and then he's been injured, so he's just started back to practicing yesterday. He's been off about a month or so, he's very athletic and shoots it really well. Got to improve his ball handling, but he's got a good knowledge of the game. Who am I forgetting?
Easton
was a guy that walked on for us last year. We wound up using him as a manager because we lost our manager right before the start of the season. But he's a very humble kid, works extremely hard every day, shoots it very well. He's from local guy from right here in town, and he's working hard every day. Did a great job in the jamborees the last couple of ball games, stepping up and making plays and rebounding, shooting the ball as well. Is that all of them in it?
I think so. Coach, what do we have to do to get back to Hutch for the second year in a row?
We got to continue to grow as a team, especially with our toughness as we go throughout the day. When you have a bunch of young freshmen, sometimes they'll play hard for one possession, two possessions, and then they slow down and taper off. And we're learning to grow into the toughness that we have, and compete every second of every day. And as we do that, throughout the year, what's hindered us some is the injuries that we've occurred throughout the since they got here in August, have had maybe six or seven guys out with injuries almost every day. I think the last two practices was the first time we've only had two people stand on the sideline with injuries. And so and when you have that many injuries, you don't get the consistency that you want from the team, from moving them from different spots and trying to make the adjustment. But to their credit, as a group, they're listening and they're trying to apply what's being given to them, and they're working hard every day. You just got to continue to grow as a team and keep competing. I thought that the last exhibition game that we had, that was our most consistent performance that we've had so far this year from the standpoint of having each other's backs on every play for the most part, about 80% of that game. And we weren't playing as strong an opponent as we played before, but it's still the teamwork is what you want and what we were striving for, and we had that for the most part during the entire game.
Indeed. Davin, what do we got to do to get to Nationals this year?
I think to get to Nationals this year, we just have to be consistent. You know what I mean? Consistency is the name of the game, and every day you wake up, you got to try your best to be as consistent as possible. And if we have each other's back and we come in and we work hard and we, you know what I mean, we gel together and mesh well, then sky's the limit, because we have a great group of guys that are very talented and work hard. So it's just a matter of time.
Good deal. Bryce, what do we got to do to run it back?
I feel like we just got to stay consistent and trust each other as teammates, like trust somebody else to make the play or somebody else to make the pass or make the shot, and not try to just play me basketball. And I think, like, playing these tough games coming up, like, we're going to have a lot of adversity at the start of the season, and we'll know how to handle it better when it comes to region play, and then we'll just eventually get to Hutch.
Matt, what do we got to do to get back?
To be honest, I think we just got to be more bought in. You know, we have a great group of guys. Everyone can score at a high level, so I just think we all got to be bought in. We all got to have each other back on defense and offense and, you know, things like that.
There you go. And that is Three Rivers College men's basketball coach Robert Kirby and TRC sophomores Matt Hampton, Bryce Wallace, and Davin Francis here on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
This is Three Rivers men's basketball coach Robert Kirby, and you are listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
And welcome back to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. I'm Mike Buehler. And joining me now are Kyle Roberts and Mark Sanders, and we're going to talk a lot of high school football. We've got some big news that's came since we taped our basketball segments, but we're going to talk about that in a little bit. First of all, we are going to talk a little bit about last week's football games. The Poplar Bluff Mules got their third win in the last 4 weeks when they defeated Hillsboro 30-21. To take some momentum in the district. That's a big win for the Mules. Mark, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it was their win against Hillsboro last year that sort of propelled their postseason momentum into a big first-round win over Farmington. I really like how the Mules didn't give up even when they were sitting at like 0-4, 0-5. Whatever the record was earlier, just, you know, another slow start to the season, which was really to be expected since they were still looking for a quarterback, trying to find an offensive identity. They seem to have found it. Their defense has also settled down. So kudos to Jeff Mannin and his coaching staff for not letting this year just fall into total chaos and being able to pull together a few wins. And, even if they don't get far in the playoffs, they have, I think, built some definite momentum going into next season.
And that's good. And, Mark, you were at Donovan last week. They hosted the Gateway STEM Jaguars. And the Dons gave the Jaguars a really tough first half, ended up taking a lead to the locker room. But Gateway came out the second half and proved why they are a state-ranked team. Mark, tell me about that game.
Well, the first half was really inspirational. Donovan played some tremendous defense. Even their offense was able to move the ball. They just weren't able to score. I had said prior to that game that I thought that they should rely more on the passing game, but instead they found their stride in the running game. They were really running effectively against Gateway, and they had a 6-0 lead at halftime. And I'll tell you exactly what happened. I didn't have enough words allotted in the paper to describe this, but right at the end of the first half, Donovan lost their starting center. He's a really big guy, number 72. His nickname is Maui, if you think about that character from Disney's Moana. The guy bears a striking resemblance to that in size, too. He's a really big guy. He was their starting center, but he went out with injury and did not return in the second half. And that was the difference in the game, because their backup center was not experienced in the position, and on two punts and two offensive plays, he hiked the ball way over the head of the quarterback and the punter. Gateway received all of those turnovers basically inside the 5-yard line for Donovan, and they had 4 easy touchdowns before 8 minutes had elapsed in the third quarter, and that was the difference in the game. I think if Donovan's starting center had been healthy, that would have been a completely different game.
Yeah, that's a good building block for the Dons. I mean, because this program, like you said, they're 4-5 right now. For the Dons, that's a great season. Coming into this year, I believe they had been 4-52 since resurrecting varsity football. And these 4 wins are the most wins Donovan has had at the varsity level since 1974, when they were 5-5.
Yeah. Sitting up in the press box, I was next to a couple of Donovan coaches who were talking to the Gateway coaches as well. And the majority of that roster in Donovan are sophomores and freshmen. So they're going to lose a couple of players, but this really is a program that is building for the future. I think their brightest spot is sophomore quarterback Alex Jones. I think as he grows in terms of football maturity and also perhaps maybe in size and strength, I'm really looking for him to do some really, really great things his next 2 years playing football there in Donovan. So, the key in football at any level is that you really need to win at a high level. You need to have a talented quarterback, and Donovan is developing that in Alex Jones. All credit, though, at the same time, to Madden Wooldridge. He played a really tough game, and that kid is just tough as nails. It didn't matter how many times he got hit taking that ball up the middle. He just continued to play hard right until the very end. And the thing about Donovan, another reason why they need more players, is that most of their starters go both ways on offense and defense. And if they can add to that roster and give some of their skill players a break and not having to play both sides of the ball, I think that's going to make a huge difference for the program as well.
Good deal. And switching gears, Dexter got back on the winning track last Friday night. They defeated Scott City Chaffee 35-3 at Scott City. A big win for Dexter. Secures the number one seed in the district. In fact, the Bearcats actually have a bye this week because of it.
Yeah, and well deserved. Like I said last week, I think that unfortunate loss to Park Hills is really going to be more of a motivation for them to succeed in the postseason, rather than it is a real detriment to what they've already accomplished this season. And they showed that on the field against Scott City. That was the least surprising result, other than Jackson's consecutive 60-point blowout wins.
Yes, and that's, as we're going to go around the horn, recapping the rest of the games last week, Jackson dominated a state-ranked Class 4 Festus team. I believe it was 62-21. Cape got a big 35-8 win at Kennett. Malden lost 44-0 at Haytie. Portageville got a nice win over Humanitarian County Central last Thursday night. You see, Saxony Lutheran beat Redbud. They are taking some momentum into the district tournament. They're going to get a bye this week, as well as is Haytie. Caruthersville lost at St. Genevieve, but the Tigers are still going to be the number one seed in their district.
That was really surprising. Is St. Genevieve in a larger class designation than is Caruthersville?
They are class three, and they're pretty good.
Are they both class three, or is Caruthersville class one?
Caruthersville's class two.
Class two. Okay. Not as much of a difference. And that was just a really surprising score. I did not expect Caruthersville to go to St. Jen and get shut out.
Yeah, well, it actually wasn't a shutout. I think they lost 30-9, but it was a pretty convincing win.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking a little bit at the this week's games, district playoffs start this week with district quarterfinals. Several teams are having byes, including Dexter, Jackson, Farmington, Hayti, Saxony Lutheran, Charleston, and the aforementioned Caruthersville Tigers. Leading off, Copperwolf Mules are headed up to Fox on Friday night to take on the Fox Warriors up in Arnold. That's going to be a good game, but Fox is fresh off a win over a really nice Ladue squad. I'm going to have to take Fox in this one.
What's Fox's record this season?
They're 2-7, but the team they beat last week, Ladue's really good. That's a very convincing win.
You know what? I'm not getting paid to pick. I don't gamble on any sort of sports, especially high school football. So I'm going to go ahead and be a complete homer and pick the Mules with a road upset. All of the pieces are in place, similar to last season where they finished strong on the year and then went up to Farmington and really surprised a talented Farmington team and beat them soundly on the road. So I'm going to predict they're going to do it again up at Arnold this weekend.
And the other game that we want to talk about a little bit, you know, of our area teams before we kind of do our around the horn predictions, Donovan is making the trip to Potosi. I'm going to take Potosi in this one, but if the Dons play the first play against Potosi like they did the first half against Gateway, this could be an upset special.
Yeah, I think so. What is Potosi's record?
I believe they are 5-3.
5-3. I mean, obviously, obviously, Potosi has the edge in terms of the record and varsity experience and playing at home in the playoffs. But at the same time, you know, Donovan has nothing to lose. You know, at this point in the season, I think they're playing with house money. I think it's really going to depend on whether everyone is healthy. If they have their starting lineup healthy, then I think that they could make it a competitive game. I'm not confident enough that I could predict that Donovan will win, but I certainly hope that they can make it a competitive game, and you know, maybe if they can hang around until late in the fourth quarter, they can steal one.
And that's going to be an interesting one. Other games Friday night, Malden is at Portageville. I'm taking Portageville in this one. That's pretty easy.
That's an easy win for Portageville. That game will be over after the first quarter.
Melville is at Cape Central. I'm going to take Cape Central in this one. The Melville Panthers, when I was in high school 35 years ago, they were good. In fact, my junior year in high school in 1989, they came down to Cape Central in sectionals and absolutely boat raced the Tigers. However, things have changed now. The Melville program is struggling. I think Cape's going to win this one pretty easy.
Cape had a bit of a dip in the middle of their season, but they righted the ship. They're heading in the right direction. I will take Cape Central.
Sykeston's going to Hillsboro. That's going to be an interesting game. I'm going to pick the upset here. I'm going to take Sykeston to win.
Yeah, Sykeston's been playing really well the past few weeks. So, yeah, give me the Bulldogs.
Kennett is making the trip to Scott City to take on the Scott City Chaffee Rams. This is going to be an interesting one. That's a 4-5 game. I think a lot of people are probably going to pick Scott City. I'm going to pick another upset and go Kennett.
Well, after Scott City lost decisively to Dexter, I think I'm going to go with Kennett also for the road win.
New Matter County Central is making the trip to what I believe is a 5-4 Jefferson team. I'm going to pick the home team to win this one, but this one could go either way.
Yeah, probably Jefferson, I would think.
Kelly is making the trip to Perryville to take on St. Vincent. I'm going to take St. Vincent at home.
Yeah, Kelly just doesn't generate enough offense to win a playoff game on the road.
East Prairie is opening. East Prairie is also, like New Matter County Central, heading to Festus, except they are taking on the St. Pius X Lancers. St. Pius X doesn't have a sparkling record, but they have gotten some really nice wins and had some quality losses. I think they're going to win this one pretty easy.
Yeah, East Prairie only has that one win at home over a Donovan team that had been wrapping up a five-game road trip. So, yeah, I think this weekend's going to end the Eagles' season.
The last game I have is I have Windsor at Perryville. I don't have Windsor's record in front of me, but I'm going to take Perryville on this one.
Yeah, you know, if the question is a team from outside our region against a team in our region, and I have no idea about either teams, I'll just go ahead and go with Southeast Missouri and pick Perryville also.
There you go. And speaking of Southeast Missouri High School football got some big news on Tuesday. Notre Dame Regional High School in Cape Girardeau has announced they are going to start playing football. They are going to play junior varsity the year after next in 2027, but for the fall of 2028, the Notre Dame Bulldogs will have a varsity football team. This is one bit of news that I think could be the biggest shakeup to high school football in the area. I mean, I'm really surprised that it's taken Notre Dame to take this long to get a football team. A lot of people think it's just going to be a matter of time before Notre Dame is one of the elite teams in the area. I don't know that for sure, but it's a very good possibility.
Well, and that's really easy to predict because Notre Dame is a private school that is supported by private tuition. And as such, they can offer scholarships to the best players in the area. So anyone from Southeast Missouri, they can recruit from Cape Girardeau County. They could conceivably poach players away from Cape Central or even Jackson, you know, offering a private school education at a reduced or zero tuition for that. It is absolutely an unfair advantage in Missouri high school sports that private and parochial schools play against public schools. The resources are different. The structure is different. The way that rosters are built is completely different. I don't like it. I think it is an unfair advantage. It's one of the reasons why the Catholic schools in St. Louis dominate year after year after year as opposed to public schools in the area with a larger enrollment. It is a competitive advantage for the private and parochial schools, and I think it is unfair to the kids that play the sport.
Yeah, I got to interject. I don't like this either, and obviously as a PD grad, shout out class of 06, we played Notre Dame, and that was when, and I was the sports editor at the Bluffer and school, I found out about how Notre Dame was able to recruit, and I said, wait a minute, this is high school. And then I found out the different rules that apply for private schools. And listen, a lot of high schools in the Boot Hill area are not super well funded. And the majority of high schools in the state of Missouri aren't either. This is absolutely a slanted advantage. Like, oh, we get to cherry pick kids like it's college. It's never sat well with me since I found that out. And obviously, I'm not going to slight Notre Dame High School. What they're able to do with their resources, by all means. But how is that fair to every school in the area?
Yeah, I want to echo that for any of our listeners, especially parents who send their kids to private school and pay out of pocket for that tuition. This is nothing against you, especially nothing against your kids who are athletes. I think that's terrific. It's a free country, and everybody is free to do what they want to do and do what they think is best for their kids. So as far as the competition in private schools go, I think that's fine. Do whatever you want. What I'm talking about is having private schools compete with public schools when you have two completely different standards in terms of how those athletic programs are funded and the pool of kids that they have to draw on to fill the rosters on those teams. That's my problem. My problem is not with private schools in general or private school athletic programs specifically, or their athletes or their parents. All due respect to all of you, it's just you should be playing other schools that are funded and structured the same as you are, because and the same thing for public schools. That's why we have different class divisions in public schools. It's to have competitive fairness. And when we throw something different in, I mean, it is literally like having a Division I school playing a Division II FBS school. It's just like the standards are different.
Yeah, a bit of interesting trivia, they actually, one way they solved that in Tennessee is when it comes to the postseason, the public schools and the private schools play in separate classifications.
I would be totally okay with that. In fact, I think that's a great idea. Yeah, go ahead and play in the regular season. Have those regional rivalries because, you know, in a few years when Notre Dame is a football powerhouse, everybody in Cape County is going to love it when they play Cape Central and when they play Jackson. Those are going to be the biggest games of the season. But, yeah, playoffs, different animal.
Agreed. It's going to make high school football very interesting in the next few years. And that's going to end our high school segment. We're going to come back in a bit, and we're going to talk a little bit of the Mizzou Tigers and a little bit of the National Football League here on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
This is Mike Buehler, and you are listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
And welcome back to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. And it is time to talk college and professional football. We're going to lead off with the Mizzou Tigers. They are coming off a big stretch, coming off an absolute gut punch of a loss last week at Vanderbilt, and right on the cusp of the CFP rankings coming out soon. Mark, I know you're very passionate about this. Kyle, so are you. Guys, take her away.
The one thing that I took...
Who wants to start?
Well, I'm just going to say one thing about it, about the Vandy game. Vanderbilt's a really good team. Mizzou let that game get away. Okay. Bad turnover. I mean, just one of those crazy turnovers that you never see, where a defender literally takes the ball away on a handoff. You know, and then they score, and then but the bright side, the silver lining in the cloud of last week is that Matt Zollers is our quarterback of the future. And if Bo Pribula's leg is hurt as bad as it looked last week, the future is now. Now, he's not going to be a world beater as a true freshman making his first start. And unfortunately, his first start has to be against Texas A&M, and that is going to be very unfortunate. It's not I don't think it's this weekend. Is it? Is it next weekend where they play A&M?
Yeah, we're on a bye this week.
Okay, yeah.
Where's that game going to be at?
It'll be at Mizzou.
Oh, it's in Como.
Yeah, but the last time we played A&M, we got beat like a rented mule. It was ugly. So,
but it wasn't as bad as the Norman Conquest.
Well, we're not going to talk about that. Don't ever bring that up again to me. God. So, yeah, my take is this season is probably a Citrus Bowl kind of season, mainly because Bo got injured. But now we get to see our future at quarterback, and we're going to be so much better set when Zollers is the starting QB beginning next season. Kyle, your thoughts?
Well, if you've ever chugged expired milk and had to puke it back up, the way we lost that game was that descriptive. It was the most Mizzou way to lose a heartbreaking game. No one loses worse than we do.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we didn't even mention the final play of the game, which first and foremost, before anything, this was a rare instance where I'm like, you know, if we lose, I'm not mad because, dang it, everyone and their mama is rooting for Vanderbilt. And right. Shout out to the nerds. Shout out to Pimp Vandy from SEC Shorts. If you know, you know. But we lose on a last-second Hail Mary where Kevin Coleman catches the ball and his body breaks the plane to the goal line, but the nose of the ball doesn't. If that ain't Mizzou, I don't know what is.
Yeah, you know, but it's again, not, it's not the fifth down, or it's, you know, it's not the the kicked touchdown against Nebraska, you know, that, that Nebraska got away with. But yeah, I mean, it's like Mizzou always just comes up inches short when it really counts at the end of the game. But,
it's,
you know, they,
it's
didn't.
It's a metaphor for being a fan of Mizzou athletics, yeah, quite frankly.
At least they didn't, you know, at least they didn't get screwed by the refs, because that's what usually happens at the end of these games.
That is what usually happens in these kind of games. But again, major congratulations to Vanderbilt. They're on a generational run, and I hope this is the beginning of something sustainable for them. But looking at Missouri, I was very excited because Matt Zollers presents an element to the offense that we've been lacking. He can throw the ball deep. He's got a big arm.
Yeah.
He was a four-star recruit that we beat Georgia and Penn State for out of Pennsylvania. And it super sucks what happened to Bo. Only Cam Scadaboo had a worse ankle injury than Bo Prabula did Saturday. Yeah. Now, we do have a bye, and I think, and that will allow us to have more time to evaluate Bo and see where he's at. So I'm anxious to find out who will start against. And keep in mind, Texas A&M is ranked third in the country right now, and they're doing, and Mike Elko's got the, those guys running wild. But do I believe this is a winnable game for us? I do believe with the amount of time and preparation, if Zoller starts, that adds a new element to the offense, because Missouri is dead last in pass plays over 20 yards in the SEC. We have the best rushing attack in the SEC and the number one rush defense, but we lack verticality.
Yeah.
Not at the receipt, not at wide receiver and tight end, but in our ability to throw the ball downfield.
Well, and I will
add an extra element.
Yeah, and I will say this: college football is one of the most exciting sports to watch, because you always have a lesser team, especially at home, that rises up and manages to upset a top-ranked opponent. So, no, it is, you know, is A&M favored to win this game? Of course they are. Will they win? Probably. Does Mizzou have no chance whatsoever? Of course not. There's always a chance.
And I feel super good with this defense at home. Listen, Faurot Field right now is being renovated, so the capacity is down. But if you listen to that crowd during the Alabama game, it did not sound like a downsized stadium. I don't think I've ever heard Faurot so loud before.
Yeah.
So A&M, buckle up, because our defense is coming. And I believe this is a winnable game, but again, major congrats to Vanderbilt. Honestly, I hope they win the SEC this year. I want my anarchy.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, that would be fabulous. Looking ahead to the rest of Mizzou's schedule, if we just go ahead and chalk that A&M game up as a loss, their last three games of the season, their home closer against Mississippi State, that's a win. And then on the road against the hated Oklahoma Sooners. I'm so glad that the Sooners are in the SEC and that Mizzou's football team is good. Because we're going, there is the Norman Conquest this season is going to be the Tigers going in and beating the Sooners on the road,
I'm sorry, what is Norman Conquest? Even I, as a lifelong fan, I don't get the reference.
77-0 it was like,
when did that happen?
Was it 84, 85, 86, 86? Yeah, yeah.
Almost freshman year, of the suit, y'all.
Yeah, brutal.
Ooh, 77-0
Yes. Now, Mizzou's not going to win by that margin, but you know, I watched Oklahoma play last weekend. They're mid, you know. They're ranked 18th on their reputation, and they have the same record in conference and overall as Mizzou does. And then our cupcake closer against the Razorbacks. This time it'll be in Fayetteville, but it doesn't matter because Mizzou owns that game. So I think they finished 9-3, and that's not going to be good enough given the competition to make it into the college football playoff. They're not going to be in the top 12, but they're not going to get, if they finish 9-3, they get a second tier bowl. I mean, they don't get a playoff bowl, but they get a second tier bowl out of that. And, you know, given that I expected this to be a transition year for the Tigers anyway, I think you count that as a success. Believe me, Mark Sanders in 1986 through 1992, as a Mizzou student and going to every single home game in Columbia, I would have paid you cash money that I didn't have for a 9-3 season and a second tier bowl back then.
There you go. And speaking of transition, we are going to transition to talking about the National Football League. I want to hit on, you know, the three games that our teams are playing this week. First and foremost, the Tennessee Titans in their last game before the bye are going to host the Los Angeles Chargers. I have to remind myself they are not the San Diego Chargers. While Mark's Vikings are headed to the Motor City to take on the Detroit Lions, and Kyle, your Rams are heading down to the big, they are hosting the New Orleans Saints. But I'm going to lead off by talking about the Titans. First of all, I think the Titans are going to lose again, but I'm also encouraged by how Cam Ward has been playing the last few games. You know, his first four games in the league, he really struggled. He was barely completing half of his passes and struggling to throw for 200 yards a game. Now he's been throwing, you know, averaging about 250 yards a game. He's completing over 60% of his passes. The team is still struggling, but he is making strides. That encourages me because that is the biggest thing we need.
Yeah, the team is struggling because you don't have any talent. You know, I mean, you don't have a lot of talent on your offensive line. Your best offensive linemen are over 30 years old. Your defense without Jeffrey Simmons is woeful, especially in the secondary. I mean, This is, you know, don't root for them to win another game, Mike. They need the number one pick 2 years in a row. And this year, now that they've got their quarterback, sell that pick for multiple picks. You need bodies out there on the field, man.
That makes sense. As much as I hate to say it, Kyle, Mark, that makes sense. Kyle, what are your thoughts?
Oh, about your Titans? Yeah, do the same thing. Tank the season and trade the number one pick and get a haul. You need a miracle and a Bible and a voodoo priestess at this point. Speaking of voodoo, it's going to take voodoo magic for Tyler Shuck.
Oh,
to beat my Rams
my
this
God.
Sunday. Spencer Rattler has been benched for Tyler Shuck, who's basically a 24, 25-year-old rookie out of Louisville. Good grief. And then, listen, I have to say this. A former classmate of mine is Saints linebacker and team captain DeMario Davis, who is going to go down as a Saints legend and borderline Hall of Famer. Brother, from one Indian to Indian Red Wolf, this ain't it.
Yeah.
Tyler Shuck gets introduced to Byron Young, Braden Fisk, and Jared Verse. Welcome to the NFL.
I'm looking at Pigskin Pick'em on ESPN, and 99% of everyone who plays this game on ESPN.com has picked the Rams, which leaves me with the question, how did 1% – of the population pick the Saints to win this game on the road?
That's what's called the Saints homer.
That's what delusion is.
Yeah, those would have to be. Yeah, speaking of delusion, the Vikings have to travel to Detroit to take on the Lions, and there are 3% of delusional Vikings fans pick the purple to win this game on the road. I am not. Detroit is going to win this game, and Detroit is going to win this game handily. If you enjoy wagering on sports in a legal sense, I would advise you to take the Lions and the points. If you take my advice, you're a fool. There's a reason that I don't gamble. Because here's the thing. Are the Vikings going to win this game? No. Could the Vikings win this game? here's the scenario, okay? First, Detroit doesn't take them seriously, and why would they? The Vikings have been awful. They have been awful in every phase of the game for the past 3 weeks. So Detroit may overlook us. Detroit may think, hey, we own this team. It's unlikely because I don't think Dan Campbell is that kind of coach. But, I mean, maybe he's looking ahead. You know, Detroit isn't perfect. They've lost two games this season. Now the Vikings have J.J. McCarthy coming back. McCarthy's been awful in his first two games this season. But one of the things that we've seen from him is that he is capable of bouncing back. So maybe he comes back and he's learned something and something clicks and he plays well. Maybe Darisaw and O'Neal, those tackles that are so essential to keeping McCarthy clean in the pocket, are healthy enough to play a full game. You know, maybe our defense starts playing at least up to the same level that we thought they were going to play when we looked at this team on paper, when we looked at how they were looking in preseason and training camp. That is a whole lot of maybes, and I don't hang my hopes on maybes. It's conceivable that Detroit could overlook the Vikings and that the Vikings' offense and defense just play out of their minds. But even then, I think they lose by a field goal.
That's going to be interesting. One other game I want to mention before we get into our lightning round. The Buffalo Bills are hosting the Kansas City Chiefs in the late game Sunday afternoon. Wow, that's a matchup, guys. That is like a rematch of several postseason, big postseason games. And this one's going to be interesting. I don't even know who I'm going to pick in this one yet.
I'm taking the Chiefs. You know, it's Mahomes looks like Super Bowl Mahomes lately. I mean, he went out on Monday and threw two really unfortunate picks to the Washington Commanders, and the defense said, "No problem, bro, we got you." And then he comes out and just destroys them in the second half. Three touchdowns in the second half. Travis Kelce is running down the field like a madman, flattening defenders in the secondary, doing the Opalite dance for Taylor up in the stands when he scores a touchdown. I mean, it's like, look, I know there's a lot of people who are like, we're sick of the Chiefs, we want someone else, but you have to admit this. This Chiefs team is fun to watch, and they're scary good.
Yep, I find their approach and their style aesthetically boring, but more or less, Patrick makes chicken salad out of chicken feed does more with less. And offensively, this team is an anomaly because they're 10th in the NFL in rushing, yet their leading rusher has 271 yards. Like, good grief. The Chiefs, they'd be even better offensively if they ran the ball more.
Well,
and Patrick wouldn't have to be out there playing schoolyard.
Well,
that defense
yeah.
is rock solid. And honestly, that to me is that's the X factor, is Spagnuolo and scheming that defense up. Keep in mind, for context purposes, Jaden Daniels did not play Sunday or Monday night, and the Commanders' defense is bad. But you know who else has a bad defense?
Buffalo.
No one talks about how rough that Bills defense is.
Yeah, and I really think Mahomes and Andy Reid are going to put their heads together and really scheme against this. And, you know, except for last season, that regular season game that the Bills won to hand the Chiefs their first loss of the season, I mean, that was just as predictable as a bus schedule, you know. It's you saw that coming down the line. But other than that, the Chiefs have had Josh Allen's number. You know, it's just this is like the old days where for years and years Peyton Manning could not beat Brady and the Patriots, no matter what, no matter how well he played, no matter how good the season was. That's sort of like Josh Allen with the Chiefs. So even though the game's in Buffalo, I think the Chiefs are going to win this game.
It's going to be interesting for sure. It's going to be a good watch. I'm just going to, you know, get my tongue untangled. It's been a crazy week, guys. You know, just a few other games, you know, that I'm going to give a couple of quick thoughts on. You guys can go and do so as well. I think that the Ravens are going to win in Miami in a battle of two really bad teams on Thursday night. I'm taking the Patriots at home over the Falcons. I'm taking the Bears on the road over the Bengals. I'm taking the Colts to win in Pittsburgh. I am going to take the Niners to win at the Meadowlands over the Giants. I'm taking the Broncos in Houston. I'm going to take the Packers at home over Carolina. I'm going to take the Jaguars on the road in Las Vegas. I'm going to take the Seahawks on the road in Washington. And in the Monday night game, I'm going to take the Dallas Cowboys at home against the Arizona Cardinals. Guys, feel free to chime in.
Kyle, go ahead.
Well, first and foremost, I'm taking New England and Atlanta, but that game's going to be really, really close because Atlanta's defense is extremely underrated and not talked about a whole lot. But if Michael Penix Jr. was starting that game, I'm picking Atlanta. But the fact is, Kirk Cochane's is very rusty in 2025. Also,
he's as cooked as a Thanksgiving turkey. I mean,
yeah. A good grief. Like that was miserable to watch. To watch them play, or didn't even try to throw a football. Also, why aren't more people talking about the Denver Broncos as a legitimate AFC contender? They're first in the AFC West. Yeah, I'd like to know.
Well, they'll be talking about them.
How many
they got to play the Chiefs first.
For over 75 sacks this year.
I know it's wow. Yeah, they're ridiculous, and you know, right now, if I had to predict an AFC title game, I think it would be Denver and Indianapolis. But you know, let's let the season play out first.
Yeah, and for sure, Mike. Consider who. Yeah, imagine 2025 or imagine 5 years ago, you'd say, "Hey, I'm from the future. Daniel Jones is going to possibly play in an AFC Championship game for the Colts."
It is that's what makes this league fun. You know what we've seen this season is a lot of teams are just up and down every week. That's why I think the Ravens are going to beat the Dolphins. The Dolphins look like world beaters on the road against Atlanta, so I think they're going to look like dead fish this Thursday against the Ravens. Plus, Tyler Huntley is playing really well in relief of Lamar Jackson, and I think the Ravens are going to run on the Dolphins a lot. The only question is whether the Ravens' defense will be able to stop Devin Achane, and thanks for that beating that Achane put on my fantasy team to your behalf, Kyle. So you're welcome.
Thank you. You're quite welcome. Anytime. I'm here on Sundays.
The Bears are going to fall back to 500. They're going to lose on the road to Cincinnati because Joe Flacco is experienced enough and still physically talented enough to throw the ball to Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. And the Bears' defense is not that good. Neither is the Bengals' defense, but I think they win a high-scoring game. The Packers are going to destroy the Panthers. The Falcons have no chance unless Penix is able to start at quarterback. And then the Patriots just look like, God, I hate to say this, they look like this year's Cinderella team. You know, it's hard to call a 20-year dynasty with 7 Super Bowl rings a Cinderella team, but this version certainly is. I think the Giants, even without Cam Scadaboo, are going to win at home against the Niners because the Niners are just still reeling from injuries, and I don't think they're going to be able to overcome that on the road. Plus, that's a 3 time zone difference with the Niners flying east to New York, and that's a noon game. So I think the Giants just have a geographical advantage. The Colts are going to take advantage of all of the weaknesses in the Steelers' defense that the Packers were able to expose on Sunday night. Denver is going to absolutely destroy Houston. That's not even C.J. Stroud is going to have a bad, bad day. If you've got a quarterback cesspool league going on, pick Stroud to play this week if you haven't already. The Jags win on the road against the Raiders because the Raiders are putrid. Seattle, Sam Darnold. Do Vikings fans still wish we had Sam Darnold? Yeah, Yeah, I think a lot of us do. We're going to have to see if McCarthy can play like a pro quarterback for the rest of the season, and especially if he can stay healthy. And then the Monday night game is really a nostalgic game for me, because growing up here in Southeast Missouri, the St. Louis Football Cardinals, the Big Red, you know, were the local team, the home team, and the two dates on the calendar that we always circled were those matchups against the Dallas Cowboys. We usually lost them, but occasionally we would win a game against the Cowboys, and, you know, it does not have the same cachet with the Cardinals being in Arizona for, like 40 years now. It really has been a long time. But Dallas has their struggles on defense, obviously. But Arizona's D is not the same as Denver's. And so I think the Cowboys get back to their high-scoring ways on offense and just outrun the Cardinals on the Monday night game. We're just about to the halfway point of the season, so one of the things I'd like to talk about next week after these series of games is to take a look at the standings and the playoff picture and what we think about that. So let's be thinking about that for next week. How about it?
That sounds like a great idea. And, guys, that's our show for this week. We've had a full one. Hope you enjoy listening to it. Come on back next week. I'm Mike Bueller.
I'm Mark Sanders.
And this is Kyle Roberts.
And you have been listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.